Welcome to the Never Not Creative podcast. I'm Andy Wright, and today we have got a great episode lined up with guests from over in the UK, and also with V Dewey, who is our co-creator for Never Not Creative. First time we've done a podcast together, V.
Yep. So it's sort of just trying to think about it. It's sort of an interesting dynamic. I'm just used to doing it on my own and seeing you do on your own and then coming together. Yeah. I'm like, what's going to happen? So I'm excited.
Well, hopefully it works. That will happen, hopefully.
I think no. So. I feel good energy. So
that's good. So we've got some special guests with us today. Do you want to intro?
Yes. Before diving in, because we have a lot to cover and talking about Deutsche Bank Awards for Creative Entrepreneurs and We 360. We're talking to two of the award winners for this, for Deutsche Bank Awards for Creative Entrepreneurs, Jamisha and Nahum. But I would love to learn more about your experience with this, going through the process and so forth. But before we dive into that, I really would love to know a bit more about yourselves, your journeys, and what led you to where you are today. So either of you can start first, whichever you feel most comfortable.
My name is Jamisha Prescott. I'm South London based filmmaker, artist, journalist. I started a project called You Look Okay to Me, which ultimately now is one of the winners of the Deutsche Bank Award for Creative Entrepreneurs. It's basically an online space at the moment for visual representations of chronic illness through creativity. However, with the help of Deutsche Bank, I'm hoping to officially make it into a creative agency where we produce sort of like documentary content, but also consult in terms of like branded campaigns on how to represent illness and disability in a way that makes sense and helps us talk about it more in society. And the main kind of inspiration around doing this type of project was because I myself got diagnosed with a chronic illness and then just found that a lot of the things I wanted to do felt like they were out of reach. So the project was a way of kind of getting closer to the things I really wanted to do. So yeah, that's a bit of me.
So I'm Nahum, hello. I'm primarily a dancer. I started dance at the young age of 4, and I started off with African and hip hop. And when I was a young boy, I was shipped off to boarding school to study ballet. And I realized at a young age that the dance world wasn't as inclusive as I always thought. So I ended up moving around, and I went to Cuba for a year. And then I went to New York for about 6 years. And I was studying there and performing there. And by the time I got back to the UK, I just had realized that things hadn't really changed in terms of inclusivity and then diversity within my profession and within the schools and stuff that I was teaching in. So I started the organization, ADDA, the African Diaspora Dance Association. And this is the organization is the first dance examination board to specialize in the credit styles that fall under the African diaspora. With that, we create exams and syllabuses for schools such as performing arts schools, vocational schools, dance universities, to give them a framework of curriculums that they can use that include styles of the African diaspora and perspectives of people who aren't normally within the dance education sector. The Deutsche Bank Award for Creative Entrepreneurs was something that I kind of stumbled upon since starting this venture, and was sort of fortunate enough to be successful.
You said then that you got into dance without realizing that actually it wasn't that inclusive. So what drove you into dance?
Well, of course, if you look at like music videos and stuff like that, you see hip hop and African dance and Afro vibes. So that's what I went into. It's part of the culture. It's part of my culture. With that, there's a performing arts school in the north of England who were doing outreach, and they came to Manchester and they taught us a ballet class, and then we taught them a hip hop and African class. And they was like, oh, we want you to come to our school. So I had no idea that these schools existed, but people actually go away to boarding school and do ballet and then do maths and English and then do jazz and then do tap and stuff like that. So I wasn't aware that these places existed. But when I got there, it was very much a space of, you know, European people. There was no people of color, really. There was maybe one or two. And there was like maybe one staff once a week, you know. so it's, yeah, it's one of those spaces that dance is quite expensive. When you're young, you don't really realize this stuff, how expensive it is to do this. Like, where I'm from, we were only paying like £2.50 a class. But when I went to this boarding school, I saw people who were like, yeah, £400 a week, like, you know. So it was a big realization that that you have to have money to even if you get a scholarship to even get to that point, to get to these places.
And I've spoken to a lot of people who kind of go, you know, it's actually quite uncomfortable to be in a room where hardly anyone looks like you. Did they work on a more inclusive culture to try and make more of an effort to make you feel involved, or is it just like you're here and you make the most of it?
Yeah, it was very much like you're here and you made the most of it. Like, at the same time, it was a very family oriented school, but obviously problems come when you are one of a few, you know. And but at the same time, I mean, I can't fault them because it's just the way the industry is. But now I'm now kind of holding these people accountable and saying, okay, well, now the change has to be made.
Jamisha, I would love just to tap into what you were saying before about the accessibility getting into the film production, video, and so forth. What really sparked you to try to get into it? And then would love to also just tap into seeing how, I know you said with Deutsche Bank, they're going to help, you know, you're going to be establishing an agency. Would love to expand upon that. So first, just love to hear what led you to this area of creativity.
Well, I always, I think, had like a connection with like cameras and stuff from a young age. And I think originally it started as photography. I just liked taking pictures. Mm-hmm. Mainly it started as a way of avoiding being in them because I just didn't like taking pictures. So I was like, if I'm behind the camera, I don't have to be in the photo. And then like I was like, well, I actually kind of like taking photos. And then when I got to school, I think being born in 95 is a really interesting year because you kind of grew up with the development of tech when it comes to camera. So I was like 16 in an era where now DSLRs became more accessible to make video, and that actually everybody can like upload their film to YouTube now. It was just kind of like a perfect time. And then I realized that, wow, with video, actually, like, I'm having more fun with this, especially when it comes to documentary, particularly finding human stories and stuff. That's kind of developed more so at the end of high school. And then I ended up going to Brit School Performing Arts. They do, they have a media, film, radio section. So that just kind of being around all those creative people, not just like filmmakers, but dancers like Naomi or singers and all sorts, like just kind of helped develop that creativity. And then I ended up going film school. So it just sort of like started with photography, just started with the camera, and then developed into something where I was like, wow, I kind of enjoy being able to tell stories. And just being born in a really lucky time of film becoming a little bit more accessible for those who are not rich, basically, to be able to make films by themselves.
No, definitely. No, that's fascinating because I'm definitely, when you're talking about that, I'm like thinking, reflecting upon, I'm like, whoa, I didn't really realize that when the year that you're born and how you were born into this nice, I guess you could say, evolution of technology for film, for that creative sector. Now with establishing your agency, what are you most excited about? Like, what type of medium, or just go across all film or all production? Is there any, like, do you have anything in store that you want to already start on producing?
I mean, so originally when I applied for Deutsche Bank, it was going to be a production company, a documentary production company. Mm-hmm. That was like how I pitched it, because that's the thing I like the most, is like telling human stories and kind of having a commitment to telling stories about illness and disability and things like that, because there's just so many crossovers of stories that are just so interesting that haven't been told yet. But I also wanted to work with brands as well and do branded content. I've been inspired by people that I'd interned for before who were doing their docs, yeah, but then they would also do like a campaign for British Airways, and it was mainly people of color in the campaign talking about flying to New York or something. So I was like, well, I could do that, but I could do that for illness as well. Like, we could do, like, I previously personally done a campaign with Galdem and Adidas, and it was about running and making it more accessible. So it was myself, a plus size runner, and a transgender runner. And so all of us were telling our stories. So I was like, okay, well, I could do that with a brand for chronic illness. Maybe Adidas is coming out with a new shoe or something. And actually, rather than only marketing it towards athletes and stuff. Well, it could be athletes, but an athlete with a chronic illness or someone that is like the shoe is like comfortable and stuff. So when I was expanding upon the idea, one of the judges of Deutsche Bank, the awards, were like, sounds like an agency, to be honest, like sounds like you're doing a little more than just a production company. Then I was like, oh crap, yeah. So that's why. So I'm just excited to sort of get started. And I think there's a space there that hasn't been filled. So I kind of like, I'm just excited to fill it. And in terms of projects I've started, I've got one on the way that has been funded, and it's just a short doc, which is kind of my love letter to Black people in chronic pain, basically. So it will be just short little experiences from Black people that have chronic conditions, and how the intersection of your ethnicity can and culture will impact the way you experience a disease. So like one of the stories in there is someone with sickle cell who had to call the ambulance on herself when she was already in hospital because they didn't believe her when she said she was in pain and needed morphine, and had to be taken by the paramedics to another hospital. Like that's those kind of experiences. Not every single person with a disability is going to experience that based on their race. So it's just wanting to make like content like that, that just makes people think and talk about this type of stuff.
It's pretty cool as well that you got your, like such a passion project becoming your job. Like at what point were you able to kind of go, oh, look, yes, I want to do photography and film. And like you said, a lot of, you know, photography and film people will end up in agencies and doing, having to do a lot of commercial work, which sometimes, you know, I don't know, dishwashing powder isn't quite as exciting as some of the stuff you're getting to work on. At what point did you go, oh, you know what? Yes, I can take something that I'm really driven by and inspired by and turn that into a career for me?
I think is with the kind of having along with my journey just amazing mentors that made me feel good about myself. I think, I don't know if I would see it as something that could have been a career had it not been for just kind of people that were along that way that were more experienced than me, making me feel like it's actually possible. So when I started Judoka Academy originally, it was at uni, the idea, and then there was this like competition to apply for like a grant just to get started. And then one of the judges ended up being my first ever mentor. And he was like, you know, you should be doing this. Like, you should start developing it or start growing it as a community at the very least. Start like that. I was like, huh? Oh, I thought it was just some little thing I was going to do. Like, I was going to just do it, like, and then finish it or whatever and leave it alone. And he's like, no, I think you should develop it or whatever. Then just throughout that time period, I've just had different people that were just kind of at each stage of development telling me that actually you should try this or maybe you should try that. And I think having that throughout that journey made it feel real and possible. I don't know if I would have felt like that if it was just myself. I'm not sure. But yeah, that I would say that having mentors definitely made me feel like it was possible.
Damn. You mentioned in one of your previous answers that you stumbled across the Deutsche Bank Awards for Creative Entrepreneurs. I would love to see how, like you just said, stumbled. And I was like, whoa, that's usually I hear people saying, oh, I was looking for something or it was very defined. Like, how did you stumble across it?
Well, I'm going to blame technology and AI because it came up as a sponsored post on my Instagram. And I mean, I had been looking for specifically support, actually, business support. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking around my phone and saying, I really need some help with this business. So funny enough, I mean, we're always looking for funding when you've got an organization. Mm-hmm. But at the time, I remember specifically looking for business support and it came up on the advertisement. It was Deutsche Bank Awards for Creative Entrepreneurs. And I was like, that sounds really, really interesting. Creative Entrepreneurs. I was like, it sounds like an oxymoron. But at the same time, you know, it's like being creative and making money. So when I saw it, I was like, wow. So I looked up the website and saw tailored business support plus funding plus being a part of a network of other entrepreneurs who want to make a difference within their communities. It just felt perfect. I remember being like, this is perfect for me. This is perfect. Like, no amount of money in the world can equal up to the package that DBase was offering. So, yeah, I definitely feel like I stumbled across it. At the same time, like, it was a godsend. So
I feel like we are going to stumble across it tomorrow. Is that what's going to happen now?
You might. The phones are listening.
And what about like, actually, so obviously now you're in, you've been through some of the process of DBase, and there's lots of resources and support, everything from kind of like, you know, downloadable resources on the website to meet and greets that you have, or, you know, support sessions. Are there any of those things that have really been like quite pivotal for you in terms of like taking things to the next level?
Most definitely the MeWe group, MeWe 360. Having, for example, as Jamisha and there's a whole other cohort of entrepreneurs who are also on their journey doing something really important. For me personally, just being, doing the retreat and being around all these people was really, really kind of inspiring. Sometimes when you're doing something like this, you can feel very much like you're on your own, like, you know, you're kind of in this, I mean, it's kind of the entrepreneur kind of journey, isn't it? So to have the opportunity to be around people, same age as you, same generation, doing something similar, but not just creating a business, but actually creating something that means something and to make a difference with it for themselves. It's just so inspiring. So we had practice pitches, which was amazing, which was one of the resources that we were given. And I remember doing that and just listening to what everyone was doing and being like, to be honest with you, if I don't win, I'll be happy because it's going to so many great causes. So yeah, I was just really grateful to be a part of this community, this DBase MeWe 360 community. And the resources, it being the community itself for me, has been the best resource.
You triggered something in me earlier, which was being creative and making money. It was... What triggered that? Like, why can't you be creative and make money?
No, you definitely can be creative and make money. I guess because I'm a dancer, you know. Dancers, we always get the bottom of the barrel, you know, you do a production and the dancers get, you know, the peanuts. So, you know, and it, the thing is, it wasn't necessarily about making money. It was about, it's about, you know, making a sustainable business.
Yeah.
And then, for example, like you find a lot of funding opportunities that will fund you, but, you know, they want equity or they want some part of it. So it was less about, you know, being creative and making money, but more about having an organization that is going to give money to a creative entrepreneur. You know, it just seems quite, you know, surreal to me that someone's going to believe in your creativity as much as you do, you know.
I think the world is a very grey, boring, you know, square space. That wasn't an app for square space. If we don't have creativity, and actually it's worth a lot, you know, it's worth a lot for people. And it's definitely one of our things is to try and help other people understand the value of creativity in a whole bunch of different ways as well.
Oh, yeah, creativity is in everything. Even like in designing an invoice, there should be not illegal elements of trying to create an invoice, but still like
creative accounting, I think that's called. Yeah.
Yeah. Creative accounting. Thank you. But it's definitely, it's in everything we do. Like, and even you think design is in everything in our world, but people discredit it so much. But it is having like those individuals that stand out. And Jamisha, you're mentioning like your mentor in uni and how originally who was a judge. And since then, have you had any other, I'm just curious, because having these mentors are so critical as creatives to evolve our career, to see the different perspectives, get out from, you know, the weeds. Are there any other critical or key mentors since uni, since that first person spoke to you and, you know, shed light on what you could potentially do?
Yeah, I've had mentors throughout the whole span, I guess. But even now on the Deutsche Bank program, we have mentors as well there, which is great. But I've had them in all different industries. So I've had like ones that have run charities. My university had an incubation period after I finished my degree. So I was on that for a year and I had an Italian mentor who was very, very hard on me. He owned a charity, but he was great. And then I had one who was a social entrepreneur. Like, funnily enough, most of them were men. I've actually, Deutsche Bank has offered me my first woman mentor, like ever. So that's interesting in itself. Throughout the whole journey, I've had many. And the one that I have now, Lorraine, who's amazing, she is in the creative industry, but she also specializes in finances, which is the key thing I really wanted to dive into for myself, as Nayan was just talking about before, the money situation and being creative. It's a very interesting journey there. So that's sort of what I'm developing now.
I think that's so many people in general, even too. I remember, at least I'm a bit older than you, but how people would always be like, you have to be in the set box. You are a designer, so your mentor has to be a designer or has to be an agency owner. But as you said, going beyond the constrictions of creativity. And I think that's innovative in itself. And it's exciting to see that it's going to benefit you and help you see a broader picture. I would love to also just to throw it over to you, Nam, and just see about your journey with mentors and see, because you've talked about your experiences, but have there been key individuals that have sort of been like that guide that sort of like showed you how to, you know, maybe take a right instead of a left? And even now with Deutsche Bank, if there's any key mentors through that are helping you.
Yeah, I mean, before I started D-Base, I was working with Mark Baldwin, OBE, and he's a choreographer, and I worked with him. We went to China together, and funnily enough, this was way before I started the organization. We were at dinner, and he just turned over his mat and started writing, and was like, yeah, this could be your life. You could have this, you could do this. You have so much going for you, you know. You should have a syllabus, the way you move, the way you do this. This could all happen, and I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I was like, yeah. I mean, I took it home with me. I've still got it. This was in Wuhan, by the way, during, you know, 2019, December. Yeah, can you believe it? So this all happened in Wuhan, and you know, I've still got the map. And I didn't think about it ever again, really, what he had said. I was like, oh, that's how cool, like, he thinks, you know, I could be so great. And then once this kind of idea kind of sparked, I kind of remembered, oh my gosh, he said I could do this. And I spoke to him. And ever since then, he's been such a great mentor, giving me advice on the way to run a business, how to do funding applications, from teaching to choreographing, so many different things that he's been able to help me on. And then since doing D-Base, I was able to have a mentor provided by MeWe360. And they gave me Farouk Chaudhry, also OBE. And he is the most amazing dance producer ever. And talking to him on the advice and knowledge that he has of the industry and of how to kind of take things off the ground in that sense has been incredible and so eye-opening. And it's been quite interesting to see how actually similar him and Mark's advice is. I mean, they both also know each other because the dance world is very small. So it's been lovely to actually experience that, but from two perspectives. I actually start with a new mentor on Friday, Ruth, and we will be starting looking at kind of like the business side of things as well. So it's really exciting. I mean, I still feel like it's such a young organization and meeting new mentors and new people every single day. And I mean, someone who I work for, Sue Luke, she's a huge principal for a huge school in Manchester. And she has been great in terms of like actually kind of helping me understand what I need to do to build the business on the business side as well. So yeah, I kind of feel like I just kind of, the more people you meet, it's kind of similar to what Jamisha was saying, you meet people and they kind of adopt you, they see like you have this idea and this plan and they want to see it work for you. So it's quite beautiful actually, like just having that support from somebody who's older, more mature, had experience. Yeah, I've been really enjoying that. So
it's interesting that you've both been through, I guess it's like a specialist school experience in terms of like creative dancing, film, photography. But you're only really getting to get good advice or kind of education around the business side of things now. Do you wish you'd got that earlier? And do you think there's a place for it earlier?
Yeah, so I wish that type of stuff would happen earlier. I would say for me personally, at my uni, there was business advice, but it was more specific about being in the traditional ladder of the film industry, of starting as a runner or whatever. Well, to be honest, it's the myth of starting as a runner and thinking you're going to make your way up to be the director, which is very, it doesn't actually happen that way. They really make you, anyway, let me not, because that route is not
where it really ends up somehow. But like, they will teach you how to like be a freelancer, but not necessarily pushing you to be like, you could make your own business and this is how you structure. And that actually did come at my uni, but it came, we luckily had an incubator at our uni for businesses that was separate. We had a floor for these businesses. And then luckily I was able to kind of get support from them while I was at uni because of that award that I won in my second year. So I did get it then, just about, but it was just because of the fact that like there was this kind of like creative business section in my uni. But I do think that that could come way earlier and could open up people's young people's perspectives on what they actually could be doing. And it doesn't have to be the traditional route. You can if you want to, but actually there's another way and there's different kind of entry points in. I think if that was said earlier, then a lot of people wouldn't have to feel like perhaps maybe the art form isn't for them. It can be for people, but maybe your way of getting in is a bit different, and that's fine too.
What you just said just made me think of this line. It's like, creativity is an ongoing path. There's no beginning and no end. And basically it's organic. It's going to go all over the place. With your experience with MeWe 360, and especially the, both of you have mentioned the retreat. And I'm just curious to learn a little bit more about the retreat, because it just, you light up when you speak about that. Like, what has contributed to like feeding this creative journey from that work, from that retreat? Like, what are there any key elements that stood out to you? And like, what was it about also?
I think for me, it was about sharing the space with people that are on their own individual journeys, but in a similar space to you. Everyone's on in different stages as well, but to share the space with so many different people that are taking the path of wanting to start a creative business that is going to do something in society, that's going to, is for social change. For me, that was just like the most powerful thing. Because of the pandemic, two of the days were online and then one of them was in person, which I think we all just really needed. Like, after seeing each other on Zoom and then realizing that we all had bottom halves and we had legs, it was like cool to like see like our whole bodies and like actually be able to touch and like to be in this really cool space. We were in the countryside somewhere in Kent. Can't remember exactly where it was in Kent, but Kent nonetheless. There were cows. Were there cows or was it sheep? I can't actually remember. It was, there were some farm animals as well. But just to be in that environment, and also like to have the team from MeWe there, and then like we were doing a lot of like exercises, and it wasn't simply about finances and registering. It was all about the mental space and where our head was at. Like, we were told not to look at our emails, and we just connected. Some of us went on a hike, some of us left early for the hike, but even things like that, just, it just brought a lot of people who I'd never met in my life like together, and the connection was important. And then when people were talking about a problem they were having, we all chipped in and like tried to help that person. But in helping that person, we were helping ourselves as well, because I'm like, damn, actually I think I should take some of that advice as well. Like, you know, it was just a really lovely experience. And yeah, Naeem and I were hiking partners. Obviously I left early, but we connected a lot there too. I don't know. It just, I can't really describe how great it was, but I felt like what I was doing made sense. That wavered a little bit like during the pandemic. And then when I met everyone, I just felt reinvigorated to just go forward with my business.
I mean, the MeWe team, I think, are really, really supportive. They're a really calm group of people. Like, I can't stress enough how comfortable they make you feel. And it was really beautiful during the retreat to be around a bunch of entrepreneurs, and we were all able to, or allowed to, feel vulnerable and show our vulnerabilities. And with that, it led everyone to feel more connected, because we realized that my vulnerability may be the same vulnerability as Jamisha's. We're having the same issues. And when you look at kind of the, I don't know, making a business and being, I find it very difficult. So to be around all these people who are also finding it difficult, or finding, not necessarily difficult, but finding challenges, should I say, within that, it just made you feel a lot more normal. With, obviously, you know, you're pitching, you're going for funding. Whenever you're doing these things, you can't show those vulnerabilities, because you're having to sell your idea and your business for people to believe in. And, you know, we can do that all day, but at the same time, like, we are only human. So for me to be around a bunch of people who were like, yeah, I've got this amazing idea, but this has been an issue, this is an issue. It was kind of like, oh, great, you know, you have an issue too? Oh, it's not just me. So I was just so grateful to be around so many amazing social entrepreneurs and people who want to make a change in the world that needs to be done. So yeah, the retreat for me was amazing. I'm hoping they do another one.
Jamisha, I can't help but draw comparisons with like the great experiences you get from mentors from MUI 360 and, you know, throughout your life, but that actually probably one of the big reasons driving You Look Okay to Me is all of the informal, unwanted, unsolicited mentorship you get from talking about chronic illness. Do you ever kind of feel like that's the, you know, it's like, oh, if only I had all this great support and, you know, empathy and understanding. But when it came to, or maybe not, because otherwise you wouldn't be needing this business, perhaps.
I guess, yeah, I guess both are true, isn't it? I guess, like, if I had all of that, then maybe you wouldn't need You Look Okay to Me. But
I did watch the, I watched the film that you made about, oh, yes, I know what that feels like. I just had the flu. I know what that feels like. I found it hard to get out of bed this morning as well. All these people that have lived experiences.
Yeah, it's quite a common one. I mean, it's kind of partly where their name comes from as well, because obviously people make assumptions, and that is one of the key things. And I guess when I started it, like, yeah, it was partly that I was getting all this like unsolicited like advice from people, family included, about what I should be doing. And then I was also getting these assumptions and stuff. But I think where it started was when I started speaking to other people online and offline, and then realized that actually it wasn't just an individual experience. This is something that a lot of people are going through. So like it started there, but then the more you scratch the surface, the more you realize how systemic it is. And actually like it goes a lot deeper into so many different aspects of life and stuff. So obviously that's sort of where it's sort of expanded out, I guess, in a sense, like where I've been fired from jobs and stuff, like if only they were more understanding and stuff like that. Or I mean, this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, like I didn't think I could do film because of my chronic illness, because the industry isn't that forgiving for people like me. And unfortunately, I'm having to have this conversation while we've had the news of somebody passing away on a film set. I won't go into that too deep, but that's kind of part of the systemic issue of the film industry, is that it is not even just about people with disabilities. Also, it's like the 16-hour days, the unsafe environment, the unforgiving nature of empathy and understanding of the fact that there are different abilities on set, and that's not really taken into account. All of that is part of a larger issue. But that is part of the reason why I thought I couldn't get in it, if that makes sense. And then actually later on, I realized, oh, I can make film. It's just not in the way that exists right now. But that's a side convo also, because I don't even think the way that the film industry is operating should even be going in that way in the first place. But that's a whole separate convo. But yeah, I realized that actually I can make films. I can be good at this. I just need to slow it down, or I need to tailor the production process. So in a sense, like You Look Okay to Me is twofold. You have the outward change I want to make, which is, oh, like, yes, I want to talk about illness more. I want to unpack these stories. I want to really like put on a platform, I guess, these stories that we don't get to see. Yes. But also as an individual, I'm able to make them in a way that actually doesn't make me ill all the time, that doesn't send me in a flare up, or doesn't make me feel like I'm letting the whole team down just simply because my body physically just can't keep up with everybody else. And then hopefully, providing, you know, when I expand, to see expansion plans, which are like in the future, being able to provide the opportunity for other people to join the team where they don't feel like that either, you know, to maybe democratize it a bit and make it feel like everybody is able to make films regardless of whether they're a disabled person or not.
You probably, in your creative sectors, I just feel like this has been a discussion and people have been talking about the issues, but it's like a golden retriever chasing its tail without anything proactive, nothing doing, getting things done. And I have to say, just reflect, listening to both of you talk about what you're individually doing, I'm like, the two of you are actually and part of my French, getting shit done, are doing, being proactive and doing what needs in this creative sector and creative industry as a whole change. And that's so, for so long, we've just been hearing that talk, but it's refreshing to hear you two actually doing it. And I would love, Nahum, the one thing that also stands out to me, and there's an organization that I'm very, I'm connected with and I have a soft spot for, that they also, it's more creative, more communication arts, but they go into schools and work with schools. And I think that's so critical, especially hearing about all the education cuts within the UK, the arts cuts and so forth. I would love to just hear what your experience is, since you go into schools, create the curriculum for them and so forth. I would just love to hear about that, because I just find that, you know, it's encouraging to hear people like yourself and your organization going in and trying to fill in that gap that the government is creating. So,
well, yeah, I mean, currently, I teach at several, or guest, should I say, I guess, teach at several performing arts schools, as well as teaching at a university in Manchester. And when I'm there, I give what I have, which is ADDA. But on top of that, I actually also teach at a primary school. When I started the organization, I wanted to make sure that it was giving back to the younger generation as well. So we started every ADDA step, which is every ADDA step, which is a primary school program that is currently set up at a special educational needs and for disability and mental health school for students who are primary school students. So it's been really amazing actually to go into the schools and work with so many students in London who are, you know, of colour, not of colour, were kicked out of mainstream school, maybe disabled, maybe non-verbal, maybe verbal, and kind of give them this cultural experience of something that they may have never had before. The representation part of it is quite amazing to see. You see, like, I never had any Black teachers growing up in primary school, male teachers anyway. I think I have one female or something. So to see their faces light up, those students who are, you know, they're like, oh, he looks like me and I could possibly do this. It's quite a beautiful experience. Going into schools isn't always the easiest. When you are trying to kind of not push an agenda, but try and open up their minds. I've had, like, you know, at first, you know, you get pushback from the odd teacher because people think, oh, well, it's new thing in, old thing out. But that's exactly what I'm not trying to do. I'm trying to say there's a space in education for us all. And we're actually, the more you educate your students on a full, you know, cultural level, whether it be dance, drama, music, if you give them a full experience, then they're going to leave the school with a full knowledge of, or a more rounded knowledge of the world, and be able to navigate themselves in the world a lot better, whether it be in the arts or whether it not. So that has been kind of the most, I don't know if I've answered your question, but it's been kind of the most amazing experience for me personally.
No, that was a great answer, because just like how you said, even just not trying to, you know, separate the traditional aspects of school with what you're bringing in, but try and create the wholeness. And it just feels like our society as a whole is, they like to compartmentalize things and they don't like to make a holistic approach. So I love your answer. It's amazing. It's just, it gives a warm feeling of potential. And, like, hopefully, you know, you're both of you, but even with what you're doing within schools, are planting the seed. So hopefully that will be, you know, more of that grassroots holistic approach that people, once they see what you're doing at that one primary school, it'll, you know, connect the dots. So
absolutely,
yeah.
I think it's an issue with our industry, which it relies so much on tradition and conformity, which is so weird given how much, you know, creatives want to do the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. Like break out of the box and do something different and be with other people, and yet, you know, we still rely on a lot of those, I guess, like expected norms of what you're supposed to do. We were running a workshop recently on how to create more inclusive cultures, and somebody brought up the word pedigree. And they said, we can't create more inclusive cultures until we address what we deem to be pedigree. And you know, there's this thing of just like, you know, if you're a creative and you've come from here or you went to school there, or, you know, you can name check this person and this person, then, you know, that's pedigree. And so that's the way you get in. Whereas it's funny, like we have to kind of take what we've what we strive for, but then apply it to the way that we work and the cultures that we kind of create in our industry, in our business. Mm-hmm. We have to get over that, you know, as much as we can. And obviously, yeah, like V said, it's both of you helping to kind of lead the way with some of that stuff as well.
And I just have to just sort of piggyback off of that too, Andy, is even the fact that the stories I've been hearing, even within the last 2 months, I'm like, about how more in the agency world, people are looking for people with a certain door names, you know, you see the titles, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is 2021 and people, no one's calling anybody out. They're still just accepting this. And just hearing these stories, like, and I relay these anecdotes to peers and friends, and they sort of just do a, like a, what? And it's just like to reality that this is still carrying on after last year, after what we've experienced the last 2 years and so forth. So it's with what the two of you are doing, and also hopefully, and also your peers, hopefully that will, as Andy says, be seeding. So this change needed.
I also just want to do a shout out because Jamesha, your work is actually very similar to someone over here in Australia who's Josie Young and her partner in crime, Amy Mills, I think her name is, have just started something called unsolicited-advice.co. And I'm sure there must be some stuff that you guys can collaborate on, or at least just have a chat.
Probably, yes. I'd love to meet them.
Because, yes. I mean, even just reading, we know people mean well, but it often feels dismissive, unproductive, and condescending, some of the words that are straight away on the website. So there must be some like-minded things to
do. Has to be, definitely.
Yes, I think so. So what's next for the future, just before we wrap up? Nahum, what are you looking for in 2022? We tried to write off 2020, and then 2021 happened, which just felt like 2020 part two. But hopefully, what is 2022 going to bring for you?
For me, we are working towards our first phase of curriculum development, and we'll be starting a pilot scheme at the very school that I actually went to. So the very boarding school I went to, we'll be starting the pilot scheme there. So, I mean, it's still predominantly a white school, but we're hoping that with this, it can be a surge of creativity and more kind of diversity, should I say, within that. So right now we're kind of working with the African, West African practitioners, some friends that I made when I was in New York. We're working on some funk style, a syllabus for funk styles, which is like hip hop, popping, locking, breaking, as well as jazz and contemporary. And we're hoping to actually start that with just a pilot program within the school, September 2022. So right now I'm actually working on a deadline to try and get that done before then.
Cool. That's excellent. Jamesha, how about you?
So for 2022, we'll be hopefully registering, so be officially registered, because I'm not registered yet, and just kind of like establishing the sort of business foundations of it being an agency, finishing the film that I really do need to finish by March, and like hopefully being able to do it full time. So I still actually work, I still have a full-time job while I do this on this, I need to stop saying on the side, I do this as well. I'm trying to use my yes, like important language around it. But doing You Look Okay to Me full time, and then fingers crossed, hopefully having a book signing in terms of getting signed. I've done a proposal. I'm just hoping for 2022 is the year that it actually becomes a thing. So fingers crossed. But yeah, that's it.
Just want to thank you again for both of you taking your time today and hearing your stories and what you're doing. And the future is so exciting. So I look forward to hearing more of that. And if there's anything that we can help with from Never Not Creative, since I'm over here in the UK, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. Even if you're in the one, because I'm based in London, grab a cuppa. I'm more than happy to do that. So appreciate this. Appreciate your time. So
V is so connected. You got to hit her up.
Thanks again to our guests for this episode. And if you're interested in finding out more about the Deutsche Bank Awards for Creative Entrepreneurs, there'll be some links in the show notes, so go check that out. Since 1993 through DBase, Deutsche Bank has overseen the launch of over 220 ventures, helping young visionaries bring their ideas to life as one of the longest running creative enterprise programs. In 2018, MeWe360 was brought in as a new partner to deliver and help shape the new direction of the program. As you can see, it's incredibly worthwhile. It's worth checking out. And, you know, it only goes to show just from Jamisha and Nadim how well they've been able to do as a result of it. Please, if you've enjoyed this episode, go subscribe if you haven't already to the podcast. Go check out nevernotcreative.org. Write us a review on your podcast platform. Recommend it to your friends. Whatever you like, share it in your socials. Thanks for listening.